Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:08, and that is Pacific Summer Time. And today is July 13th, and generally a positive day in Asia this morning, and particularly following on from what had been a really quite a firm day yesterday in China. The market was up another third of a percent, and considering the increasingly raw geopolitical relations that you have in the South China Sea, one has to conclude that the last thing that the administration in China wants to do is to have any kind of upset in the stock market domestically. One could potentially only conclude that they are aggravating their neighbors in an effort to shake any kind of focus from the domestic economy onto geopolitical considerations, which is, you know, a sort of very typical game of smoke and mirrors that many totalitarian regimes engage in. So that would suggest that they will continue to support this 3,000 level, that then we can anticipate that we're going to continue to have higher lateral ranging on the Chinese stock market. But it was a generally positive day right across the region. The majority of markets were up less than 1%, but better up than down, not least that this continues to represent the global economy's growth center. But in Japan, the yen remains a little bit weaker. Certainly holding the pullback from that 100 level, and it's at close to 104.5 right now. Abe is obviously looking at a reset of his Abenomics, and there is the potential there for both fiscal and monetary stimulus in Japan. In the Eurozone, it's a very similar story. The likelihood remains that there is going to be some form of fiscal, almost certainly monetary and potentially fiscal stimulus. The UK is going to have the Bank of England making decisions on rates tomorrow, and the pound is already beginning to price in that there's going to be a rate cut. Carney doesn't appear to be the kind of person that is going to hang around when there is such a potential headwinds facing the UK. So the pound is really quite oversold at present, and it had a good upward dynamic. In fact, it's the first upward dynamic since the Brexit vote yesterday. So we have a low of short-term significance, but it really does need to do more to confirm that we have a low of more than short-term significance. And at the minimum, we could potentially have a mean reversion move, but then we would almost certainly have the Bank of England coming in to bring down the currency, because in the game of currency manipulation, there's no country wants a strong currency, but some need a weaker currency more than others, and among those, the UK is really topping the charts in here now at present. And probably followed on fairly closely by China, the renminbi remains in a very consistent medium-term downtrend. And when you are rationalizing industries and trying to change a business strategy that has been working pretty well for the last 30 years, then the last thing you need is a strong currency, because they're going to have something that's going to take the pressure. So the Chinese definitely need a weaker currency. And then when we look at the US, the dollar index is currently around 96. So it's a bit stronger than halfway, stronger than half of the that range that's been in evidence for much of the last year. And there's probably no desire in Washington to see the dollar index surmounting the 100 level. And not least when the Fed is unlikely to raise rates this year. And considering that they were talking about 4 interest rate hikes in January and now they're not going to be having any at all, then is there such an impetus to push the dollar higher? Well, considering that the majority of central banks are beginning to talk about monetary stimulus and governments becoming increasingly populist and talking about fiscal stimulus, then that's a pretty bullish environment overall for gold. And gold today was up about $10. It is a bit overbought in the short term around this 1350 level. So we could have some additional consolidation. But there is one perhaps less discussed attribute that gold has relative to both stocks and bonds, and that is it is considerably further away from its all-time peak than either of those, considering that both bonds and equities are now hitting new all-time highs. Gold is quite a bit below its 2011 peak. So on a relative basis, it has significant catch-up potential. And the very fact that it offers a hedge against the devaluation of currency, the loss of purchasing power, and the debasement of currencies that central banks are currently engaged in, gives it really rather attractive attributes, and not least when you have negative interest rates in more than half of all the sovereign bonds in the world. And I think at this stage it's probably considerably more than half, with the Swiss 50-year at negative rates, every bond in Japan out to 20-year maturities at negative rates, and now we're getting compression just around about everywhere else. But you know, we've had the panic after Brexit, so and there is the potential that we could get a little bit of that unwound in the bond markets, but these are well-defined downtrends in those yields, and when you have so many bonds that are yielding negative, then you know, the spread at present between U.S. Treasuries and bunds is still close to an all-time high. Now, it's entirely open to question whether one could actually benefit from that, because of the variation in the currency and the fact that the yields are so ridiculously low. So just a very small move would erase any gain that one might have by just having the by being right on the spread, but perhaps unable to hedge the currency, because the interest expense and the expense of actually putting the trade on would negate the profit potential from the tightening of the spread. However, the very fact that it is difficult to put on the trade, it doesn't necessarily mean that we're not going to see that spread contract, because investors are yield hungry. They absolutely need to find their yield somewhere. And it's increasingly difficult in the bond markets. The corporate bond markets are also seeing their yields contract, and equities are looking progressively more attractive. We're seeing a return to medium-term uptrends. Certainly, some evidence of investors beginning to look afresh at the equity markets. That we have had over 2% yield on the S&P 500 for at least the last few years, and at the present time that is considerably higher than the 10-year yield. And perhaps more importantly is that equities have the potential to increase their dividends, and that is not the case with fixed rate bonds. So then there are, and there is a good reason why it is shares like telecoms and utilities and the dividend aristocrats that, you know, most particularly the consumer staples, many of which are global autonomies, are performing in this environment. And it's because they have, you know, the global franchises that throw off strong cash flows, and they've been able to increase their dividends on a regular basis for, in many cases, 25 consecutive years if they're U.S. Dividend aristocrats. And that's a powerfully attractive characteristic, regardless of the valuation. When yields are negative, if you're a yield-hungry investor, and there are a lot of yield-hungry investors out there. So as long as we have central banks continuing to experiment with extraordinary monetary measures, then the outlook for stock markets, and particularly shares that have got these records of increasing dividends, will remain really quite positive. But against that background, then we have to consider that valuations are not cheap. And that that is very real. It isn't something that can simply be thrown aside. And I'm posting an interview with Jeff Gundlach by Barron's in comment of the day today, and you know he is making the point really quite vehemently that equities are not the place to be because they're too expensive, and of course he is a bond investor, so you know, and bond investors generally prefer to buy distressed types of scenarios, so at these levels equities are certainly not cheap from that perspective. However, then it isn't really a question of whether they are cheap. They're definitely not cheap, but are they going to get more expensive? Are we moving into the third psychological perception stage of a bull market, which is characterized by euphoria, where the crowd takes over from rationality and concludes that there is no point fighting any longer, that one should just get along and forget about the concerns that have kept one out of the market for so long already? That's usually a good decision at the beginning and a bad decision at the end. But if we do get a euphoria type scenario, then that would confirm that the Fed and other central banks are still serial bubble blowers. And in fact, there is absolutely no reason to conclude that they're not. But also, it would help to indicate that this has been a 7-year bull market and it's going to be concluded with another big leg to the upside, and then potentially that we move into a much more difficult environment later, so that then it would potentially speed up the end of what has been already a very good, a very impressive move to the upside. So in the absence of a clear downward dynamic, we would have to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside on stock markets. And now that we have seen them push out to new high ground, and that would suggest that valuations are going to get more expensive, that yields are going to compress, and not least because they're competing and that they're more desirable because interest rates everywhere else are so low that government bond yields could well get even lower than they are already, that we move into a much more difficult environment in terms of ascertaining what is likely to happen later because of the imbalances that have been created by extraordinary monetary policy. And there's very little sign that those imbalances are going to be unwound short of a logical end or a crash at some point in the future. And I'm not predicting that this year or potentially even next year. But generally speaking, big bull markets don't end with a whimper. And this has already been a big bull market, but it could well get to be a much bigger bull market. So it's a very, very interesting time. And particularly if stock markets can sustain these breakouts. Meanwhile, oil prices were down in here today, and that's really countermanded what was really quite a positive day yesterday, and are back to now $45 on WTI and $46.60 on Brent crude, and that 200-day moving average is just north of $46. It's already a bigger pullback. It's already been ranging for longer. It's already broken the progression of higher reaction lows. So if it sustains a move below the moving average, well, then that would suggest that we are moving into a much more volatile, deeper corrective phase for oil prices, where they could be ranging with a potentially downward bias for a few months before demand could be reasserted. And I think it is notable that gasoline prices have already broken down, and they might well be leading. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.